Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back. I'm your host, Deanna Chapman, and today I am joined by Marina Gajito, and we are talking about The Bazaar of Bad Dreams. This is another Stephen King collection, so there are quite a few stories in this one, and if you've heard some of the previous episodes before, you know, maybe I'm not the biggest fan of his collections, but I do have some stories that I enjoyed out of this one. But first, Marina, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, and I'm super happy to be here and to be joining you in this conversation. And just for everyone listening, I wanted to say that I'm sorry if I mispronounce anything. I'm Brazilian, so English is not my first language, and I wanted to put the disclaimer here.
Totally fine. I'm terrible at pronouncing things, so, you know, when you read things and you don't hear them, it's a little difficult. But to just jump right in, and, you know, we probably won't talk about every single story, but I do like to talk about the stories that kick off the collections, because I think, you know, some thought goes behind the order of the stories, but especially, you know, which one starts it and which one closes it out. So Mile 81 for me was a very strong start to this. It was an intense story. You have all of these cars pulling up and this old muddy station wagon was just stopped here, and people keep going up to it and the door creeps open. Nobody gets out, but then it sucks people in, and you not only get to see a bunch of different types of people come up to it, but a bunch of different types of cars. And you have, you know, someone who is pulling a trailer with horses. You have a family with kids, and the kids don't get out of the car. So then they see all of these things happen. And this is just such a traumatic story, especially from the kids' perspectives.
Yes, absolutely. It gave me so much It vibes, and the fact that the kids kind of feel before their parents that something is wrong and that they should not approach the car, but the parents insist on doing it anyway. And then the 11-year-old boy that helps the younger siblings that are out of the car, and the fact that the car came apparently from outer space, and this outside evil perspective, it just reminded me so much of It, and it made me so happy.
Yeah, this was a really, really good start for me, because I was like, okay, I really enjoyed this first story, so let's see how I kind of like the rest. And it's not to say that this was a bad collection by any means. I haven't thought any of them were bad per se. It's just that there were, you know, a mixed bag of stories for me. And I did find that to be the same with this one. But Marina, is there a story that you want to touch on in sort of these earlier first handful here?
I think Premium Harmony is one of the first few ones. And I'm usually such a huge fan of collections of short stories, especially Stephen King's. And I tend to like, if not all of them, like the majority. But Premium Harmony was really not it for me. I couldn't feel for any of the characters, you know, the couple arguing. I didn't care about them. I didn't care about their lives. And I was just extremely upset that the dog died the way that he did. I was so angry.
Right, because you have this couple and they fight all the time. They're going out to buy a present for someone in their family, and then the husband is in the car with the dog, but then gets out of the car and has this terrible thing happen. But he gets back to the car and realizes that he forgot the dog in the car because he was so preoccupied with so many other things. But it's like, you know, if you have a dog, you have a responsibility to the dog. You know, it's not like the dog could have gotten itself out of the car like a kid or something could have. But yeah, definitely upsetting.
I just wish he had died too. I'm like, I hoped you had died with her, like after killing the dog. I hope you die too in a very gruesome way in a follow-up story somewhere.
Yeah, I will say that the next story, which is Batman and Robin have an altercation, was not remotely what I was expecting out of that title, because it's about this man, Sanderson, and his father, who is, you know, in a home, and they go out to Applebee's. And yeah, it kind of keeps coming back to this memory of when they went out for Halloween dressed as Batman and Robin. And even though it was kind of this nice little story, I was like, oh yeah, that wasn't what I was expecting at all. Because then it kind of takes this turn and you see them get into this car accident and the dad just takes action.
Go psycho.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, he stole a steak knife from Applebee's and killed this guy who beat the crap out of his son. It was just so bizarre. And I mean, this is, you know, called the Bazaar of Bad Dreams. And I know those are two different spellings there, technically, for the words. But I was like, oh, okay, that's how this is going to go. And what I look for in the collections, honestly, is just some sort of through line. And I feel like that still gets lost here, because you have stories that end up tying to the Dark Tower with Yur, or you are. I'm not really sure how that one is pronounced.
Me either. I'm just like,
Yeah. And then you have his baseball story with Blockade Billy. And I was like, I kind of skimmed over that one. And I was like, I'm sorry, Stephen King, but
I've never even watched a game of baseball. Like, I'm Brazilian. We don't do this. I'm like, what's happening?
Yeah. And I mean, I'll watch baseball, but it's not one of those things that I think interests me as a Stephen King fan to read his writing about baseball, because he's done that before in other collections. Like, he had this whole story about Owen's Little League game or something, and I was like, okay, that's cool. Love the family time for you, but I this isn't what I read Stephen King for. But I want to back up a little bit and talk about Yur, which is a novella that was originally released for Kindle. And this was kind of one of King's early Kindle experiments, because they were taking on these singles almost. And he incorporates that into the story, which I really liked, because when he kind of gets meta about things, especially, you know, writing and releasing books and things like that, I think him writing what he knows and putting his twist on it is where he really shines. And the twist in this is that this Kindle connects you to another world. And that's where we get that Dark Tower connection. Are you super familiar with the Dark Tower books?
I've read the first couple of books, so okay, enough to get the references, but you know, not, I never wanted a Kindle so much in my life. First of all, it's pink. and I just kept wondering, if we search through different Earths, how many new Stephen King novels would we find?
Right.
And how different they could be. But honestly, there was a part in this that I wasn't that happy that the protagonist got back together with his girlfriend at the end, because when they have that fight where, you know, that instigated him to get the Kindle in the first place, where she takes the book out of his hand and like throws it across the room, I'm just a very cautious person, and I don't think that anyone that in the middle of an argument throws anything across a room, that's not a great sign, you know. And it reminded me of other novels of his where most times a couple start with this little arguments and then it builds up and something tragic happens at the end. And, you know, this couple specifically, I'm like, not a great start. Maybe you guys will end up, you know, in another novel with a very different ending.
Yeah, I took notice of that too, because you have this guy who's super into reading and he's not really paying attention to his significant other, and that's what prompts that. But at the same time, you're kind of like, okay, clearly this isn't going to work out unless something fundamentally changes. And So you have Wesley Smith, who is an English teacher, and, you know, I don't know an English teacher who doesn't enjoy reading. Maybe they don't all have as much time for it as they would like because they have to read terrible papers by students and things like that. But this really fit for the character and the story as far as, you know, the students being like, oh, you should get a Kindle kind of thing. It's like when you're trying to get people in your life who are, you know, a generation or two above you, and you're trying to like get them into this new technology that would make their lives easier. And, you know, I say that as someone who has 5 bookshelves full of physical books. And also, I have so many books on my Kindle, though. So, you know, it's both for me. But yeah, it's something that, you know, just looking at the pink Kindle on the cover for the original Kindle release, it stands out. And it's one that had a keyboard, which they don't have those ones anymore. So it kind of shows this new technology while also still showing its age.
Except, no, oh my god, when you mentioned that, the My Old Lady one, something that really jarred me when I was reading it is that it makes a reference to Justin Bieber, and I'm just not used to King making modern references, quote unquote. I'm like, it feels so wrong somehow for him to be talking about Justin Bieber. It was a little disturbing.
Yeah. But is there anything else that stood out to you with your in particular?
The aggression, and I just, something that really sucked me in was the fact that I really wanted one and, you know, explore so many authors because I'm a literature major myself. And so I could also identify with Wesley in the sense that I didn't get a Kindle until last year because I really like, no, I like the physical books and it's not going to smell like a book. I can feel the page, but then I had to get one for to research my thesis because the ebook version was just so much cheaper than the physical ones, especially the books in English that I needed to have. So I caved and I bought a Kindle and I ended up loving it so much, but with a little sense of guilt that I was betraying my books. So I really identified with him when he gets so hesitant and he, you know, approaches it with being so careful and a little bit scared, you know, I don't know if I'll like it. And even if I do, I'll feel like I'm not being true to myself if I do like it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how that happens when you love this physical medium, but at the same time, you're like, but this is so convenient.
Yes. And I can buy so many more.
Yeah. And it's funny, too. I had actually read one of these stories before diving into this collection because Under the Weather, which is a couple after Your, is actually included in the paperback edition of Full Dark No Stars, but not the hardcover edition, or I don't think the Kindle edition either. So depending on which copy of Full Dark No Stars you read, which is a novella collection of King's, you got that extra story. And I was reading through it and I was like, why does this sound so familiar? And then I was like, I've read this before. You know, so just the fact that I kind of had already forgotten that was the title of that story that was included at the end, because I didn't really discuss it that much in that episode because, you know, my guest didn't have it in his copy. So I was like, oh, okay, no. This is a weird thing that they did. But it kind of gives you a peek at what this collection is. And that one is pretty creepy. This guy is like going to work. Yes. He's talking about this vacation he took with his wife. And then the wife is dead at home the entire time.
And the dog is eating her flesh. And again, I just feel so bad for the dog.
Dogs aren't having a good run in this collection here, are they?
No, usually I'm pretty chill about reading Stephen King because I don't really care about what happens to the people in the stories. But the second they put a dog, I think one of the very last ones about the apocalypse, I just cried so much when he had to put the dog down because of the radiation poisoning. I cannot deal with dogs dying. I can deal with murder and people eating each other, but dogs. It's my line. It's my line, Mr. King.
Yeah. Another interesting thing about this collection, too, is that, you know, with previous collections that I've read, a lot of the stuff has been adapted. You know, when you look at the novella collections like Full Dark, No Stars, 3 of the 4 stories have been adapted, same with different seasons. But in this one, you don't actually have any finished adaptations. Mile 81 is supposedly in the works, as is The Little Green God of Agony, which The Little Green God of Agony technically got a webcomic adaptation, which is available for free on Stephen King's website. I haven't read it just yet. It's on my list to get to for the Patreon episodes, but those two are supposedly going to be getting movies. I never believe these things until they actually come out, though. But just the fact that a lot of these don't have seemingly as much interest, I was kind of intrigued by, because I was like, oh, I'm actually not familiar with a lot of these stories because of the fact that there aren't any adaptations.
There are no adaptations. And I think it's a little weird, because there are a few that would be great, like Bad Little Kid would make an amazing movie. I love this one so much because it really just goes into, this is the epitome of like absolute true evil, and then it puts in the form that we associate with being kind and pure of a kid, and how interesting it would be, because it begins with him as a convict telling the reason why he murdered a child. And, you know, I was a little afraid that he would leave it a bit open-ended, you know, without us knowing if the bad little kid really was what he was saying, or if he imagined it, or just trying to justify his actions to himself. But with the ending of his lawyer finding the propeller head in his car, I just loved it so much, because it's like, you can really kill evil. It's just, it's gonna survive and it's gonna live on and progress to torment another person. You can really end it for real. It just keeps returning. And it would be such a great ending for a movie, or even like for a series like they did with the one that has the little tiny army men that come to life and attack the hitmen.
Oh, yeah, that was an episode of Nightmares and Dreamscapes.
Yes, that series was amazing. I loved it so much.
Yeah, and I'm actually kind of surprised they haven't done something along those lines where they just make an anthology again. Because a lot of these stories, you know, you can maybe do 20 to 30 minute segments on and have something like either a TV season where the episodes are, you know, anywhere from 20 to 45 minutes long, or you can do something like Creepshow or Cat's Eye, where you have 2 or 3 segments that you can kind of connect together in a way. And I think there are, like you said, some stories in here that would lend themselves well to adaptations. So I'll be very intrigued to see how they make Mile 81 and The Little Green God of Agony come together, you know, put those on the big screen or small screen if they go to streaming. Who knows? At this point, everything is still so up in the air. But, you know, I didn't even realize that The Little Green God of Agony was a short story until reading this collection. I always thought it was just some webcomic that King had put up on his website as a way to try something new. But You have this character, Andrew Newsom, who is the 6th richest man in the world, and he is confined to his bed because he was in a plane crash and he was the only one who survived, which that right there is a lot of strange circumstances already.
Yes. How convenient that the one who survived was also the richest one. And I'm like, seems a little too unfair. He gets to be rich for all of his life and then survived a plane crash.
Which is kind of wild when you think about it, because, you know, at least here in the United States, we've had so many famous musicians and, you know, some other people die in plane crashes. So the fact that this guy is probably pretty well known, considering how rich he is, not to say that every single rich person is necessarily famous in the same way that musicians and actors are, but, you know, there's probably a good amount of people who know who he is. And yeah. It's just this bizarre story. And I'm glad that there's a webcomic, at least for now, so that we can get the visual for it. Because I think not only have comics been a great way to bring some King stories to life, you know, you have the Dark Tower comics, the Stand comics, and a handful of others at least. So this makes me a little more excited to dive into the comic, because I just thought it was its own thing, and to get the story now and then be able to go read that and see how it compares, that'll be really interesting.
Especially, they have such a great opportunity with the Green God of Agony, because it has such a gothic vibe, you know, all of the help and the such a huge house, and it's a stormy night with thunder and clouds, especially like the gothic revival with, you know, the Haunting of Hill House on Netflix and how it seems to be making its way back into horror movies. It has just such a potential to be a big hit, regardless of it being an adaptation of Stephen King or not, that if they don't screw it up, it can become like truly a beautiful, beautiful movie.
Like I said, though, I don't believe any of these things until they are in front of my face and I can watch them. They're like, oh, we're remaking this and this and this. And I'm like, are you?
Are you lying to me? I don't believe you.
Well, because some of them have been stuck in development for so long. Like, at one point, Mike Flanagan was attached to Revival. Now he's not. And it's like, okay, that one's in limbo yet again, because it was in limbo before Mike Flanagan was attached to it. But I think, you know, for me at least, other than these last three stories, I don't know if a ton of these stood out to me. So before we get to Obits, Drunken Fireworks, and Summer Thunder, are there any others you want to talk about real quick before we sort of start wrapping up?
Just the cookie jar, I found it really interesting because the focus of the story wasn't really the magic cookie jar that just keeps refilling itself with cookies over and over again. It was so amazing how he took this one supernatural element and used it to actually tell the stories of these three brothers and how they dealt with their mom supposedly going insane and somewhat abandoning them with her death, how all three of them ended up going into the army some way or another, and, you know, how he was the only one left alive who felt more connected to his mom. It just felt more of like a family retelling than focusing on how amazing and weird the cookie jar was. And I think it's, you know, he's one of his special abilities to take this huge supernatural element and then not make it the center of the story. It's just a little detail sprinkled in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to kind of touch on these next two, at least, together a little, because I think you just have, you know, these two stories before you get really, really dire. And, you know, Obits is not a fun story by any means. You know, you have this guy who writes these obituaries for people, and he kind of does them in a nasty way because these people honestly seem like pretty terrible people. But then you have this twist that other people within a certain radius with the same name are dying, and it just cranks everything up to 11. As soon as you find that out, you're like, oh, this is kind of wild, because it's only happening because of these obituaries that are being written, not because of the initial person dying. It's because of the writing afterwards.
I love it so much because, again, he and Dance Macabre I'm not really sure how to pronounce that in English, but he speaks a lot about on where talent comes from and why are we talented at writing the things that we do. And we know, how do we discover talent? It's usually an accidental way. And do we control our talent? Does it control us? Especially because the more obits he writes, he starts to feel like, you know, it's something out of himself, that it's using him more than he is using the power to write obits. And I felt really bad when we found out, you know, that several other people were dying, because I had got caught in the joy that, well, bad people were dying, you know, horrible people that did awful things. And I'm like, well, I'm not too sorry that they're dead. I'm like, I'm kind of cool with it. And then he smacks you in the face with, every action has consequences. And like, are you prepared to pay the price of the consequences? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't think that's so cool anymore, dude. Maybe you should like stop it, please. No more.
Yeah. Yeah. And he keeps telling himself too. He's like, okay, this is the last one. And at the same time, you're kind of like, I don't know if I believe you, though.
Yes. It's pretty, he becomes addicted to writing the obits.
Yeah.
And he's determined to stop. And then like, oh, just like one more and then I'll stop. But it just becomes more powerful every time he does it.
Yeah. This one, it was a fun read. But at the same time, you're like, wow, King went really dark here. And then, you know, this next story, Drunken Fireworks, is a little more lighthearted, competitive yes. family kind of story. And you have these two families. You have the old money family and the new money family. And you can tell that the old money family has been there for, you know, at least a few generations. So they're not as well off as the family once was by any means. But there's this fireworks competition every year. And you see the old money son just saving and saving and saving and going out and buying the biggest fireworks he possibly can. And, you know, he has to do some sketchy things to get them. He's like, all right, I gotta go meet this guy at this place
and send him an email like, no, I meet this guy, and using the connections. It was so fun to read it. I was like, oh my god, I hope he wins. I was rooting for him so much.
Yeah, and it's just kind of nice to read something from King that is a little more lighthearted, even though it kind of does end in destruction when the fireworks kind of go off course and burn the house down, and then the other family burns their house down. And it's just like this mutual understanding, though, by the end of it, to yes. where they're just like, eh, okay, we lost our houses.
We're chill. What's a little bit of arson between friends, am I right?
Yeah, so this was certainly not setting you up for what comes next with Summer Thunder, which closes out the collection. This is very much along the lines of The Stand. What did you think yes. of this closing story?
It was very much King in its style of, you know, dealing with the apocalypse and how, you know, we kind of bring it upon ourselves. And he talks a lot about when he was writing The Stand that he had so much fun destroying society because it felt peaceful after it all ended. You know, no more worrying about gas prices or making rent or anything. And you kind of feel this peaceful acceptance in the two characters that are left that we're following. They're just, you know, resigned to the fact that they are going to enjoy their last few days or a couple of months on Earth, and then that's gonna be it. But I felt, you know, a little sad that it was the last one in the collection because I wasn't that big of a fan of it, especially because I prefer when King writes it in first person POV, because he has such a way with different voices and inner monologues and how everyone talks in such a way that you feel like you're listening to a real person talking. So when he does the third POV, I'm not that huge of a fan. And again, when the guy has to murder his dog because his dog is slowly dying from poison, I got so absolutely upset And it was, you know, bittersweet that he killed himself by doing the thing he loved so much, which was riding his motorcycle. And the thing that bothered me the most, I think, is because usually King's not an author that's hopeless. You know, when you end it, you feel like, you know, the world can be better. It's fucked up and a lot of awful things happen, but we can find our little bubbles of happiness and joy and love and survive and keep moving on. And in this one, it's just, no, the only release you get is death, and that's it, and it's over.
Which, given that the setting is, you know, a nuclear war, you get the feeling, too, that maybe he didn't want to put this one earlier in the collection, or maybe the editors didn't, because of how it ends. And, you know, this is a story that, if it had been in the middle somewhere, it easily could have just taken you out of the collection. And I know not everyone reads the collections front to back, so maybe this doesn't matter as much. But for me, because that is how I'm reading these, I do like to look at the order of the stories and the flow of the stories. I also liked that he kind of gave you these little tidbits in between each of the stories, you know, kind of talking about the story before you get to read it. And this one, it was definitely like, this is like The Stand, but a much more narrow focus. It's very focused on this one person's story, whereas The Stand felt much bigger in what he was trying to accomplish with it. But yeah, I would agree that this definitely isn't my favorite thing, but I'm kind of glad it was at the end, so that you're just like, okay, we're done now.
Like, my spirit is crushed. I'm just gonna, like, the exactly, I had to, like, he crushed my spirit. I'm like, enough. And I was already, like, there was two that I really hated in the collection, which were the ones, like, which was poetry. And, you know, one was really sweet that he was making an homage to his friend, you know, Tommy, that not actually named Tommy, and Bone Church, because I'm just not a fan of poetry in general. And I actually put it down for a little while, you know, for a couple of days after I read those, because it throws me off to find poetry in the middle of a short story collection. But I did love that he explained a little bit of how he got the idea. And especially as someone that spent 2 years trying to get inside King's head for my thesis, you know, and how he wrote and his process, it's always a fun bonus when he explains to us a little bit of what was going on inside his head.
Especially since these stories have such a wide range of published dates too. You know, a lot of them were newer, but some of them hadn't even been published before, but you have these spanning over a handful of years. So, you know, he could have been in a very different mindset in 2009 than he was in 2015, or, you know, when you have stories like Obits, Bad Little Kid, and Mr. Yummy not even having been published before. So, you know, I don't know the exact dates of when he wrote some of these, but it's not beyond King to write something and hold on to it for a very long time and then publish it in a collection. Yes. So, you know, the fact that these are actually all, for the ones that were previously published at least, pretty close together, I do think, you know, it's still nice to have that little explanation from him of his mindset and everything like that. But Marina, is there anything else you want to mention about this collection before we go here?
Just the last thing was the basis of morality, because it really did make me question myself, because, like, you know, if I was in such a bad situation and desperately needing money, like, what would I do for it? Especially, for example, if my mom was sick and in desperate need of treatment and I needed the money and someone offered, and, you know, they offer, but you have to do something that's illegal, but something that's not gonna be, like, permanent for the person you're hurting. You know, she punched the kid in the face, which is awful.
Yeah.
And in normal circumstances, I would absolutely never do. But then again, like, how do you know what you are willing to give and sacrifice when you're absolutely desperate?
Yeah, this one for me was just a little too weird. I was like, this is a very strange thing to ask someone to do for money.
Yes. Like, yes.
You're going to run by a child, punch them, and run away, and when you're going to get, like, thousands of dollars for this? That's super weird.
Filming it.
Yeah.
But then again, he's like, he holds so much power over her because of the money he's offering. And just the fact that he's offering that kind of money for her to do something so awful is already jarring. And then she chooses to do it. And then you see the ramifications in her life of how that one choice affected her life, her husband's life. And at the end, I was just like really questioning, you know, what would you do if you were desperate enough?
Yeah, that is certainly a great question that he poses with the story for sure. And, you know, he's always hinting at these ideas and questions and just coming up with sometimes the wackiest of answers.
Yes.
But even though his collections have not been my favorites, I will say I have liked the novella collections a lot more than the short story collections. And I know a couple things in here are considered novellas, but I'm talking, you know, something like Different Seasons, where it's just four sort of bigger stories that are being told. And, you know, I believe I gave this a 3 out of 5 on Goodreads, which seems to be where I land with almost all of the collections. So not the greatest thing, not the worst thing either. They're just, they exist and I can appreciate them.
I love them so much. I love short story collections, you know, in general, but especially King's. And it has like a special place in my heart because the first book of his that I ever read was his first short story collection, Night Shift. And I just love these little snippets of stories that sometimes are not even actually finished. And it usually like makes me pumped to go and then read a novel. It just, short story collections are my soft spot.
I think for me, because of the fact that I'm not just dipping in for a story or two and moving on to something else, I'm reading it as a whole, they haven't had the kind of flow that his novels have. And I would have loved it if these collections would have been a little more themed out. Obviously, there are some themes to them with Night Shift in this one, for instance, but overall, it's just really hard to get through these because of how much things shift from one story to the next. It's not like, you know, you're just moving on to the next chapter. It's like, oh no, this one's totally different from the story you just read.
It's chaotic, and I love that, you know, there's a huge part of him that is very much chaotic, and he's just throwing things at the reader and be like, see how you react to this and this and this. And it's usually at least interesting. Even if it's not pleasant, it's always interesting.
Can't argue with that at all. Well, Marina, I think that's a perfect note to end on. Chaos.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for joining me to talk about The Bazaar of Bad Dreams. I know I mentioned this to you earlier, but I am considering, you know, coming back to these collections and maybe diving a little deeper into them 1 to 3 stories at a time, and really hoping that they resonate with me more if I do it that way versus just plowing through everything like I have been. So thank you for bearing with me here. I know we didn't talk about all of the stories, but I think we touched on a good amount considering there are 20 in this collection.
Yes. And thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun. And I do hope you make the episodes, you know, 3 or 4 stories, because the more you pay attention to them, the weirder
Yep.
you realize that they are.
Yeah, I have no doubt about that. All right, that does it for this episode of Chat Cemetery. You can support the podcast on Patreon for $1 a month. You'll get a thank you on the show. For $2 a month, I will send you a Chat Cemetery sticker. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Chat Cemetery on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You could also rate and review the show. That's a huge help. And as always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.